Good afternoon. Calling the State Affairs Committee to order at 3:10 p.m. Tuesday, April 11th, in the Max Grunberg Room. Will the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Ledoux. Representative Birch.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Tuck. Representative Josephson. Representative Knopf.
Here.
Representative Wolf.
Here.
Representative Tuck. Chair Karskonkis.
Here, and with five members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. Representative Tuck notified us earlier he wouldn't be able to make it today. We have two items on today's agenda, but first we'd like to thank Martha and Stephanie and Kelsey for facilitating the meeting today. And for members, I will be passing a card around from Kelsey that all of you is more exciting than the notes that normally circulate up here. So I'll pass this your way, Representative Birch. Thank you, Kelsey. Very kind. Two items on today's agenda, House Bill 190, Representative Tallarico's legislation relating to the regulation adoption and oral comments, and then House Bill 163, relating to the Department of Public Safety, law enforcement, service agreements, and fees. And for House Bill 163, we noticed public testimony today, so we will take that. Starting off with House Bill 190, Ms. Morris, if you're free to come forward and speak to the bill. We had we have two amendments submitted by Representative Birch, which I believe members have, amendment number one and amendment number two. We can review those amendments, but first, perhaps before getting to them, want to see if any members have questions for sponsor staff on House Bill 190 before we dive into the amendment process. Are there any questions? Or if you have any comments you would like to make also.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Julie Morris, staff to Representative Dave Tallarico. I don't have any other comments. The two amendments that Representative Birch will be presenting to you are very self-explanatory by just reading through them, and I'm going to defer to him and let him present those.
Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased today to offer two amendments to be substitute for House Bill 190. That'd be draft version J, which we have here. Basically, the two amendments, the first is entitled, I think if I look at it right here, it's actually J2. And if you look at the top upper right-hand corner, it'll say 30LS0732/J2. I believe that is what we wanted to move for amendment number one. That's correct. This basically considers the cost of the state, when you start looking at doing extensions. If you look at the first section here, relates to the considering cost as a component in this regulation, and then secondly, down line 17, if an agency has taken both written and oral testimony under this section, the agency shall limit extensions to one extension in 45 days. That's plain and simple.
Thank you, Representative Birch. Any further comment from the sponsor on amendment number one, J.2?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Julie Morris, staff Representative Tallarico. I think what our intent was is that the cost to the state would also be considered whenever there was a proposal to change regulations. And then under Section 4 of that amendment, if the agency has already taken both written and oral testimony, what we didn't want was a continued request for extensions. I think that it becomes very costly when you do that for the state, although there may be times when you may need to do that. We just wanted to try to limit that.
Thank you, Ms. Morris. And I have a question about extensions. I'm actually not terribly familiar how they work customarily. Is that something you could speak to? And I also note that there's Michaela Fowler, who I'm guessing might be willing to testify or speak to this in the back. But Maybe first, Ms. Morris, since you helped draft the, or presumably helped draft the amendment, perhaps you could speak to that and can call someone from the administration.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. An extension is basically a re-notice. So they go through the whole process of putting out a notice, they collect all the comments, and for whatever reason they may decide to re-notice. And exactly how or why they choose to re-notice, that would have, you'd have to get that answer from the department as to why they would, who actually makes that decision, and at what point do they decide to re-notice. So.
And Michaela Fowler, Susan Pollard, would either of you be able to speak to the nature of how and when re-noticing occurs?
For the record, Michaela Fowler, Special Assistant to Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And there's a variety of circumstances where we may re-notice a regulations project. Sometimes we might have a regulations notice where there's significant public interest and we want to provide additional time. There have been other circumstances. For instance, at one point there was a board of commercial services, big game commercial services board regulations package that we put out at a time where they were in the field, and so there was significant feedback from licensees that they were unable to issue public comment due to the timing of a regulations package.
Thank you. And one last question, how approximately how frequent or common is re-noticing? Or extending comment for regulations or regulation projects, I guess is the terminology.
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, the Department of Commerce probably does two or three that get extended per year. I can't speak to other departments.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee relating to Amendment Number 1 or, I guess, the bill's context? Representative Knopf.
Ms. Fowler, I guess I'm a little behind the eight ball here, so I'm just looking at the very first line, and in the original bill it says an act relating to giving notice, and then in the amendment it talks relating to the adoption amendment repeal of regulation. So the amended version doesn't talk about giving notice whatsoever, and so I guess my question is, are we substantially changing the intent of what the sponsor was trying to accomplish? Do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Knopf, I believe that the amendment inserts additional language but does not delete any language from line one.
Following act, insert. So it's just an insert, and the existing language will stay in there as well, then, your understanding. Okay. Thank you.
Other questions from the committee? And any comments from either you, Ms. Pollard, or Ms. Fowler on Amendment Number 1?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a comment. This is Susan Pollard from the Department of Law, and it would be, I'm in the legislation and regulations section at the Department of Law. I'm uncertain in looking at the amendment, and I'm looking at the Amendment J2, and in particular the language from lines 16 to 20. We are... Our discussion here is focused on what we would call like supplemental notice. When I first saw this amendment on this afternoon or whenever it was posted on BASIS, it appeared to me it was addressing an extension of a hearing time. But perhaps that is not the intent. Maybe the committee could weigh in on that. I'm not sure.
Representative Birch?
I think it's to limit the multiple, you know, extension upon extension after oral testimony. That's my understanding of the intent and objective, is it's just that we just don't get layered up to just have one extension.
And then through the chair, Representative Birch, so, but you're is it correct then that you're trying to address the notice, because notice goes out of proposed regulations, and there are, excuse me, Susan Pollard, Department of Law, there are steps that the agency needs to take, and then there's a statute that relates to public proceedings, and that appears to be the one that is being amended here, which relates to when agencies may, you know, perhaps have a public proceeding on a regulations project in a different, in addition to a written notice. But, and I think, I guess I think your comment was pretty clear that what you're trying to get at is to the supplemental notice that an agency would only be able to do no more than 45 days of an extended supplemental notice. Is that
right,
the intent?
Just so they don't start just layering up.
And Ms. Pollard, or Ms. Morris, do you have a comment? Go ahead.
Yes, through the chair, Julie Morris, to staff, to Representative Tallarico. I think I know where she's going with this. The extensions are not just to the hearing. The extension is to the whole regulation process, so that if they get to the point where they've collected all their comments, whether orally or written, and then they're at a decision point, and what I believe the intent of the amendment is saying that if you're going to re-notice and take in more comments and more oral testimony, that to do that, you don't want to keep doing that. We just want to do that one more time, especially if you've already done both written and oral. So if she thinks that perhaps another word in there, perhaps maybe extensions of re-notice, I'm not opposed to amending this amendment if Department of Law feels more comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. So I think our intent is clear. I just want to make sure our wording is acceptable to what the Department of Law feels acceptable for the intent. So,
Ms. Pollard, not to put you on the spot, but do you feel the language specifically, lines 16 through 20, achieves the intent as described or would benefit from revision?
The honest answer is, we prefer to take a little time to look at it and also be able to also discuss things with another one of the attorneys in my section, so we could look at this and assure the description of what you're looking for seems fairly clear. Seems that the intent is that an agency, board, or commission could do a supplemental notice, but only provide the public. But provide the public 45 more days in which to submit additional comments. So with that understanding, you know, we could look at it a little bit further, see if there's something that's clearer.
Thank you. And then one question I have for the amendment sponsor is, I mean, given Ms. Fowler's comments that it happens maybe 2 to 3 times a year, granted that's only one department of many agencies across the state, are there, I guess, sort of the problem this is seeking to solve, are there particular instances or boards or commissions that you're familiar with in which this extension process kind of repeats on itself and goes on forever?
I haven't got the depth of experience, but I think that in talking to the bill's sponsor, it's my understanding that it would benefit across the board, all the boards and commissions.
And Ms. Morris, are there particular instances that you think this amendment would sort of speak to that it seeks to solve?
Through the chair, for the record, Julie Morris, staff to Representative Tallarico. Certainly, absolutely. I think that what we don't want to get into is a cycle of doing regulations over and over again. Now, I understand there will be times when maybe they roll out a regulation package and it doesn't do what they think it's going to do, and then you get a lot of negative comments, so then they pull the regulation package back, rework the regulations, and then they re-notice it again. But see, in my mind, that's a completely different regulation package. It's not the same regulations rolled out again. So I guess what I don't want to see is us spending more money on the same regulations being rolled out again and again and again. We don't do that here at the legislature. Time is money, and every time you roll out a regulation package, it costs state money. So,
Representative Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, permission to dialogue with Representative Birch, please.
Go for it.
Mr. Birch, can you refresh my memory? I think when we had this discussion, it's been a while, but it seemed like I thought that when we decided that the board would accept verbal or written testimony, the dialogue went something like, since that option was there, we didn't want to continue extensions. Is that what, exactly. Is that the dialogue?
Exactly.
So we felt there was enough notice in
right.
there. Is that recall?
Yes. And J3 basically addresses the written oral testimony is permitted.
Is that, do I have that right? I think that's what I'm trying to recall what we were trying to accomplish, and I think it was, since we provided so many mechanisms for comment.
Ms. Morris.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knopf, absolutely. You have it absolutely right. Putting in the oral comment in there allows for that extra testimony, but what we didn't want to happen was for it to just continue on. And our sponsor likes this amendment very much of what Mr. Birch has presented.
Representative Knopf.
So for the legal team, I'm kind of wondering about process. You're with Department of Law or Legal Services?
Yes, this is Susan Pollard. I'm with the Department of Law in the Legislation and Regulation section.
Thank you. And so I guess my question is, so I think your concern was about this amendment in regulation, and so I'm asking you about process. So when this is drafted by Ledge Legal Services, which is a separate division than yours, do they not review the same thing, look at the same thing you're concerned about now? I guess I'm kind of asking about the process here. We've had it drawn by legal experts, and now we have another legal expert expressing concern about it, so I'm wondering, is it just opinion, or is there something in there that conflicts? Or, and I really mean to be polite, I'm really curious on this question here. How, help me out there, please.
Through the chair, representative, I'm not sure I can particularly give an answer to that question exactly, because the legislative legal would draft an amendment sort of as requested. Perhaps it would be general language by the sponsor. Perhaps it would be something more specific, but When I look at this, I'm looking at the context, the statute that it's in, which relates to hearings. And so when I'm seeing the word extensions, that was sort of what was triggered to me, that was what I thought that the intent was. A couple other things, so like the 45 days. And again, I'm not sure like when we would be running 45 days from exactly what point. That would be the kind of thing that you might look at with my colleagues and see if there's something we could do to clear it up for us. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions from the side of the table? I wonder if it might make sense, given this discussion, maybe the opportunity to sort of workshop the amendment a little bit with the Department of Law and, come back at a future hearing. Does sponsor have thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that we had this prepared, by the legal services folks to my good friend from the Kenai here, and I think you just haven't had it very long. I mean, I should say the Department of Law has not had it for a day or not a very long period of time. I know we're kind of compressing our time frame here. It seems like it's a fairly straightforward change. What would be the shortcoming of adopting this amendment, moving this forward, and then seeing if there's a change necessary down the road?
Yeah, a good question. And Representative Knopf kind of actually asked in that direction right before we gaveled in. We're the only committee referral actually for this legislation, so the next stop would be the House Floor, House Rules Committee, which may sort of give us a little additional impetus to make sure things have a nice buff and shine on them by the time they leave. Ultimately, sort of to the discretion of the bill sponsor or amendment sponsor here.
I'd say let's take the time to do it right. If there's a difference of opinion or if there's a clarification necessary, is that something that can happen in a short period of time, or is it? I mean, is something.
I believe there's been some collaboration already on this legislation. The CS that the committee is reviewing was the result of some conversations. But Representative Knopp, did you have
for you, Mr. Chairman? Question for you, sir. Going to Mr. Birch's, is it appropriate, it might be for Department of Law as well, is it appropriate to adopt amendments, come back with a new committee substitute, and reviewed by Department of Law at that point, and then future amendments offered to that new substitute? Would that be the appropriate process? Then you have a complete product in front of you for the Department of Law to look at and bring forward any concerns and a final amendment to that one, I would think might be the appropriate way to go. I'm just asking the question here.
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. We could run with that. And I think we certainly understand the intent of amendment number one. And
I'd like to roll amendment number two into the mix as well.
Absolutely, when we get there.
It's actually the meat of the issue here, and that's the fact that we do have some entities that do not permit, as strange as that might seem to every one of us, do not permit oral testimony. And I think oral testimony needs to be, we publicly need to be able to be in a position to accept oral testimony, and that's what the Second Amendment's about.
We can take action on Amendment Number 1 with the understanding that we can come back with a committee substitute and sort of explore if there need to be technical changes to achieve intent at that time. So
I guess my question is there a way that we can incorporate Amendment 1 and Amendment 2 into the committee substitute?
Absolutely, yeah. We can take action on both amendments today.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Is there a motion to move Amendment Number 1, Representative Birch?
Yes.
Amendment number one has been moved. Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number one, J.2, has been adopted. That takes us to amendment number two, J.3. Representative Birch.
Yeah, this amendment basically simply adjusts the title. It helps us avoid out-of-state interest when implementing or reviewing proposed regulations, in that it has a requirement. Currently, there's no way to verify that those influencing changes are Alaska residents or not. So when people come in to testify, they can come from anywhere. What this would propose is we'd like a process to be similar to what we do when the public testifies before us on any other legislation, is to give a regulator. So we've got a sentence here that says the agency shall require a person who presents a statement, argument, or contention in writing or orally to give the person's name and, unless acting on the person's own behalf, the person's affiliation, which is what we require when people testify in front of us. And this just puts it in the regulatory requirement. That's not a problem.
I think the Department of Law would be. Thank you. Representative Birch, any comment from bill's sponsor staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Julie Morris, staff to Representative Tallarico. We're in total agreement with that amendment.
And any comment from Department of Law or Department of Commerce on amendment number 2, J.3?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Susan Pollard, Department of Law. And we looked at this afternoon, but we may want to look at it a little more in terms of thinking about, your intent is wanting to identify folks and whether there would be situations where, a person might want to comment, and for some reason, would it be an anonymous comment, and yet would be something the agency would want to still consider. That's typically how we have handled these types of questions in the past. And so, again, that's just all my comment on this one.
Representative Wall.
Well, I'll thank you, Mr. Chair. Along those same lines, if someone were to submit written testimony that they wanted to be anonymous, that they wouldn't want to put their full disclosure, I guess, And that's something that, that's a question, is that something that happens?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, again, agencies are best able to describe like how many comments they get in. You know, we do let folks know that typically written comments would be considered a public record. They're not published, but they're a public record, and typically most agencies say that in their notice. Just trying to answer.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Birch. I would just say, as a policymaker, it's germane to me if there's 50 people calling in. I'm interested in if they're constituents, if they're Alaskans, or if there's like 45 people calling in, you know, hammering on my planned walrus hunt, and they're all calling in from someplace out of state. You know, I just think that it's relative information to have at least some modicum of understanding as to, you know, particularly with, you know, with testimony, what, you know, kind of where it's coming from. We ask for affiliations, they have some, and it's not like we're asking them to provide a real ID or anything. I mean, this, all we're doing is saying, you know, just name and affiliation. I mean, it's, which I think is just a de minimis level.
And I guess I would have a follow-up to Representative Wool's question. I wasn't quite sure I heard an answer. Do anonymous comments on regulations happen right now? And if so, how do agencies handle them or react or respond to them?
And Representative Christ-Tompkins, as somebody who's involved with regulations on our department, this is Michaela Fowler, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. I cannot recall any recent occurrence of anonymous regulation comment being submitted. However, I would need to go back and review our records in order to answer that question, and I'm happy to do that and get back to the committee.
Representative Birch?
I would suggest that, you know, if somebody has a reason to seek anonymity, you know, if they're talking about a, you know, some crime bill, or I mean, if there's somebody that's a victim and doesn't want to be identified, I would say, you know, obviously the chair would have the discretion, and whoever is doing the hearing would have the discretion to say, I understand you want to have, you know, be anonymous or something. But I think, for the most part, I think most of the testimony that you receive when people come to talk either to a regulatory body or to this body, I think it's a reasonable expectation that they would kind of identify themselves and kind of what, you know, what their affiliation is.
Any other comments or questions on amendment number 2? I guess my own thoughts here, looking over this, I would agree with your thoughts, Representative Birch. It ends up being in the commenter's probably own best interest to sort of identify who that person is and what affiliation they have. I guess maybe take a little bit of pause about the shall, the sort of requiring it, and, you know, if someone wants to sort of submit anonymously or whatever, I think that comment probably is going to carry less weight ultimately, but I wonder if that should sort of be prohibited. But Representative Ledoux, did you have a comment or question?
Well, I was just going to mention that when we take testimony in this body, the first thing that we do is we ask somebody to identify themselves and state their affiliation for the record. So it doesn't seem particularly outlandish to ask somebody to do it if they're doing testimony with respect to an agency regulation. I mean, so that was my only thought.
Representative Kopp.
You know, I'm going to side with my counterpart on my left here. I think it's appropriate. It's kind of common practice. But so I think if it's written testimony, they may not, you know, we can just note that it come anonymously to us. Don't know who the sponsor is or the affiliation, and that's just on the record. And orally, if they're calling in, somebody's sitting up there, I'm not so sure they're opposed to giving their name. They're sitting right in front of us. I think telephonically, if they're reluctant, depending on, you know, if they're testifying on a sex crime or on a or a game violation, I mean, or a game regulation. I think they have, you know, I'm going to speak to telephonically would be where we'd more apt to get somebody. But two reasons they wouldn't want to, I mean, it could be it could be somebody from an organization, a nationwide organization that has, that would prefer not to, for us, you know, for us to consider their testimony but not know who they're representing, I guess, is what I'm trying to say other than stuttering here. So I think it's reasonable to request a name and affiliation, and if they prefer not to give that, then let us know why you prefer not to give that. We may not bind them to it, but I think it goes to the credibility of their testimony. You know, I think it leaves it in question. So, I mean, I support the amendment. I think it's a good amendment. It's pretty common practice what we do, and I think there's avenues. I mean, it does say shall request. Does it say they actually have to? I mean, we shall request doesn't mean they're mandated to do it, I don't think.
Shall requires. The
shall require. Yeah. Might look at shall request or something, you know, something like that. If it made somebody more comfortable, but I think overall it's good language. Thank you.
Further comments on amendment number 2, J.3? Seeing none, Representative Birch, would you like to move your...
I would move the amendment, sir. J.3.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number 2, J.3, is adopted. That takes us back to the bill as a whole, but I think given prior conversation, we will hold the bill and maybe ask the sponsor to draft a CS and perhaps sort of workshop the language as noted with the Department of Law, and we can bring it back for review, perhaps final review. Any final comments, Representative Birch?
Yeah, this isn't a big, I mean, this isn't going to take 2 weeks or anything, is it, right? I mean, this is just something we kind of look at it over for in a day, and or, I mean, I'm asking more than anything else. Are we asking? Does that request go to our legal services, or is it? In other words, who produces a work product that's a CS?
Representative Birch, I can comment quickly. I mean, I think it's a conversation between the sponsor, staff, and the agency, and then the product of that conversation will be a revision request to legislative legal once they've had the chance to workshop things. But if either of you would like to comment, you're welcome to. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my comments on the bill as a whole, which came up last meeting, was the elimination of the newspaper requirement. I know we're all hipsters with phones and, you know, have all our podcasts and apps that we go to, but and I was thinking about this while on the floor the other day while getting the Arctic Sounder and the Homer
News,
Homer Spit. What's it called?
Homer News,
and newspapers from smaller communities that maybe many people in these communities, that's their main source of news, and not everyone living in a little cabin out in rural parts of Alaska necessarily are connecting to phones to read agency websites. I don't read agency websites on my phone. That's for sure. Well, that's not true. I take that back. But anyhow, my point being that for some people, not having it published in a generally accessible medium might not be a good idea.
Noted. Representative Birch?
I would say I don't think this doesn't prohibit it. It just says it is deleted as a requirement. So, I mean, if you're advertising for some fish deal in Homer, and you're kind of thinking that Homer's the only place that's going to see it, then maybe Homer's where you'd want to advertise for it. I mean, I think it gets away of the, it doesn't make it a requirement.
I do understand that, Mr. Chair and Representative Birch, yeah. But on the other hand, it does cost money, and depending on what the publishing requirements are, how many days, and that kind of thing. And as I was looking in the Alaska Journal of Commerce the other day, and it has a big public notice section. Again, maybe some people actually, that's their source of public notice. So I would imagine if it's not required and it costs money, some agencies might choose not to do it. Probably the reason they do it is because it is required. So I guess I'm a little leery of cutting off potentially a lot of people that may, be their only avenue of exposure to it.
Representative Knopp.
So this is for Department of Law. So and this notice requirement, so in this particular bill, but Title 29 requires municipalities to advertise, does it not, in newspaper of general circulation? Isn't that, it's kind of, I think we regulate all municipalities for that requirement. And so I guess I'm asking you about, if we delete the requirement from here, are we starting to have conflicting requirements, or do you recall that?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, would you like me to address your question specifically in light of, there was a question, Susan Pollard, Department of Law. Last time we had a meeting on this bill, there was a question by a committee member also about newspaper notice, so we did a little research and have some points that I think will address, for the Chair, Representative Knopp, your question directly.
I'd like to have your opinion on the overall advertising by newspaper issue, I think.
All right. So I will start, through the Chair, Representative Knopf. Your question goes to sort of my last bullet point here in terms of thinking about the goals of giving notice. I will remind the committee that I am speaking as someone from the Department of Law who advises executive branch agencies on regulations issues. So other agencies that need to go out for public notice, for example, for land use decisions, may have different considerations that they would want to discuss about the types of notice that they do. You know, my comments are really limited to what is required, what are the legislatively mandated steps for that an agency must go through to validly adopt a regulation. Also, as a reminder to the committee, when I say agency, I'm including boards and commissions. It'll just shorthand that under the Administrative Procedures Act. And it is true that giving notice of what the government is doing is considered by most to be a core function of government, so that folks know what is happening and what their government institutions are doing. It is also correct, and it was reflected, I believe, Representative Knopf, in your comments, that throughout the statutes there are many references to newspaper notice. You see it in mechanics lien statutes and in some Department of Natural Resources, Department of Transportation. You know, it's throughout the statutes. In terms of the area that I can speak to, which is what is the goal of notice in a regulatory context, again, we're speaking about all executive agencies who cover a number of issues, everything from the licensing fees, like Ms. Fowler's agency folks do, to land use, to fees for, you know, use of public services. So it's a broad spectrum that, you know, the agencies deal with when you're talking about regulations. So one might say that the practical goal then of giving notice would be to reach as many folks as possible, in the sense that you want as many Alaskans who might potentially be affected by the regulatory package, that agency action, to be able to receive notice. I'll stop here just shortly just to make sure I'm going in along the area that the committee wants to hear from. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Representative Kahn? Yeah.
Alrighty. And then one might say that, so typically, and for many years, there's been this requirement that to publish in a newspaper of general circulation. Folks have, you know, raised some questions about that. Is there potentially a less costly way to require notice? Remember, too, that notice of the regulations will be going out as required by the legislature. So the main areas of notice are publication in a newspaper of general circulation or a trade or industry publication, notice on the online notice system, notice sent to legislators, interested parties, and other folks. So those are the three main avenues. So looking particularly at newspapers, again, the Administrative Procedures Act, which is Title 44, Chapter 62, has been around for a long time. You know, that was really the main area of notice. Like, most folks had access to a newspaper, whether you're picking it up in the train station or you have it delivered to your door. So it gives as many people as possible easy access to the information. So we don't have what, you know, one of the attorneys in our office like calls a digital divide, or there's some folks who would have better access than others. And that may be, you know, part of something that the committee wants to consider when you're looking at this issue of notice. If you're interested, I can give you a little guidance on what a newspaper general circulation is. That doesn't really seem to be the question. It seems to be more of a general kind of question.
And maybe if I could interject, I think at least one of the questions Representative Knopf was after is, would there be different standards between, say, municipal government and noticing regulations at the state level? Or if I'm not getting that right, Representative Knopf, I'd like to clarify.
Well, no, you're partially right, but it's kind of a, not only do we have the notice of requirement, then we have the terms, you know, like length, how many times. There's a lot of things that go to notice of requirement. And recognizing that probably in the day when this was written, if I may, Mr. Chairman, in the day when this was before electronic media, social media, newspapers was probably what there was when this statute was written. So recognizing it might be antiquated stuff. But I guess my point was, Mr. Chair, what I was trying to mention is that there are a lot of things in statutes in regards to notices, you know, whether it's regulation or whatever it may be. I know throughout time in local government we've been bit by the notice requirements where we either fell short or didn't require. Representative Johnson's probably dealt with that similarly. And I do recall somewhere in history, we call incidences of cases being filed because we didn't notice properly. And so I guess that's kind of where I was going with that question, sir. And so.
Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think I'm not quite as challenged by the, at the municipal level, from my experience, we had basically got away from hugely expensive advertising, and we started kind of targeting, and I think this leaves in place, published in the, it gets rid of the general circulation, the trade or industry publications that the state agency prescribes and posted on the internet system on the state's internet website. So it is published in a trade or industry publication that the agency prescribes. I'm sure the different departments are all you know different, but I think my sense is that the folks that are interested in advertisements for a construction project, they're probably zeroing in on whatever trade journal that advertises those, and the people that are interested in the legal, you know, a legal case or whatever, they're probably zeroing in on that trade journal. So I think certainly the notice requirements are, or at least I haven't heard any alarm in the areas that I'm familiar with in local government with respect to the the huge cost savings gained by not having to just kind of blindly publish this thing in a paper that's it's kind of the last four or five pages of the news. Through the chair,
Ms. Pollard, go ahead.
Susan Pollard, Department of Law. One of your committee members, I can't remember if it was Representative Knopf or Birch, just made a comment that reminded me of one other issue about notice, which is, first of all, the requirements to take the procedural steps. Those are statutory. Agencies need to take those procedural steps when they're doing a regulations project. They're good steps. They require, they allow the public to understand what's going on and to participate in the regulatory process. That is why the Department of Law has a number of forms that we request agencies use in the regulations project, so that when we get a project, we have for the record that's going to be filed with the Lieutenant Governor's office a record of that every step was taken, so that if there is ever a challenge to a regulation, there's always this nice little package that shows that everything that needed to happen happened. You know, one of the pieces, of course, that's included in that is, for example, an affidavit related to public comment, related to the statute we discussed earlier today. This, and another critical piece is a copy of the newspaper notice, because then that shows us that this notice happened. And some papers now do like what they call an electronic notice, so you're not actually cutting out a newspaper. And that is retained in the final agency file. So even 10 years from now, you could assure that that critical step had occurred. So that is something to think about when you're considering this question of notice, is what gives a good record for should something need to come back, look at this 6 months, 6 years from now. Thank you.
Representative Knopf.
So would it help if we just put in a simple word on page one, line 8 or 9, where it would say, we'll say page 8 or line 8, and it would say, may publish in the newspaper of general circulation or trade or industry publication. Would that language leave it to the department to decide the method of notification? Would that give them a little flexibility? And it may be from case to case, depending on the regulation or where the hearings are held. So we're not restricting, but providing options. And they may explore one, may get feedback that it's not working, may opt for another one. So my question is, would language like that work?
Through the chair, Julie Morris, staff to Representative Tallarico. For the record, you know, it's really interesting. You are the lawmakers, and from there, regulations are written. Okay, so in this law that is the Public Procedures Act, it says or. It doesn't say and. So it could be newspaper or trade or industry publication. And you got to watch the ors and the ands whenever you're doing legislation, because what happens is people say, oh, you have to do it all. Well, no, you don't. It says or. That's the law. So it's or. And my point being is that you have to reach the group of people that will be impacted mostly by those regulations and by those laws. I understand the point of reaching everybody possible, and that I think we do that quite a bit, because in the bold it says the state's agency internet website, where people can go online and they pull it up and you can hit your comment, and the only information that's requested of you is your name and your email. That's it. That's all that's requested of you when you comment on regulations online. No affiliation, no address, doesn't even ask you if you're an Alaskan resident. So you have a couple of different functions with this regulatory system. I don't want to be disrespectful, but sometimes it feels like it's on autopilot, and I'm trying to take it off autopilot. I think we need to be more in control of what happens in our state, how much money we're spending on regulations, and who is influencing our regulations. That is the intent of this. Now, I am more, you know, the sponsor's more than willing to look at how best we can do that.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you. Yeah, and I appreciate that, but the fact of the matter is I'm talking about notification, not regulation. And to your point, on lines 8 and 9 of page 1, the bracketed components are bracketed. Newspaper of general circulation or would be deleted, so it would say published in the trade or industry publication. So that does not allow for publication in a newspaper of general circulation under this language. So my proposed verbiage would say may publish, then you would leave the newspaper of general circulation in there. Not saying you must or shall. It provides the option. So that's what I'm proposing. So keep in mind, when you put that in bracket and delete it, you no longer have the option. You will publish in a trade or industry publication. And so that's the difference.
Maybe a question, Representative Knopf, do you have another question?
No, I wanted to clear that up. That was my concern as far as what she was.
And one question I have is how agencies right now, given the present law, have sort of used their discretion for instance, what regulations do you publish in a newspaper of general circulation, and what regulations might you choose to publish in a trade or industry publication, and maybe some specific examples of how that decision is made.
For the record, Michaela Fowler, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. Typically, we choose to publish in a newspaper over a trade or industry publication due to cost. The majority of the trade and industry publications are more expensive than some of the newspapers of general circulation. There is a large degree of variety in that statement. For instance, the ADN oftentimes will spend approximately $750 to advertise in the ADN. The Juno Empire is more expensive. And so there's really a lot of variety in what situation we'll choose to publish in different programs. It also depends on who the population is that we're trying to reach. For instance, we do ANCSA regs from the Division of Banking relating to proxy solicitation maybe once a year. There will be some change, and those are regulations that we publish in approximately 9 different organizations, different papers, in order to try and reach the greatest number of affected individuals. So we are making determinations based on the population and where they are located and how we can best reach them.
And I have one follow-up question before going to Representative Ledoux. When these regulations get noticed, sort of looking at this other section of law that notes that when broadcasting the notice, an agency may use an abbreviated form of the notice that provides the name and date of the may use an abbreviated form of the notice and the internet address of the online public notice system where the full text of the notice is found. So, I mean, it seems to me like that existing law is a way that you don't have to publish essays of regulatory language in the newspaper, but you can have kind of a short link, you can describe what it's about, and if you want to learn more, you go there. How frequently does that happen? Like all the time, 100% of the time, or how is that language, how does the rubber meet the road with that language?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Representative, I'll have to get back to you with an answer for how often we use that.
Okay, Representative Ledoux.
I was just wondering, for the smaller newspapers, Homer, Kodiak, etc., what does it cost to put in your typical ad in those papers? You mentioned what it costs for Anchorage and Juneau. What?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'm sorry, I'll also have to provide follow-up for the answers on those.
All right, thank you.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the other thing that's not mentioned is frequency or how many postings, because obviously you can buy a small ad in the ADN or something, it doesn't cost $750. But if you're running, we all buy ads for various purposes. Certainly, when we run for office, we sometimes buy ads. And for if you own a business, you buy a lot of ads. But, you know, is it every day for a week and that kind of stuff? And a weekly paper like the Arctic Sounder, you know, maybe you don't buy every issue for 5 weeks. You just buy it once or something. So, you know, I don't know what you're a balance or a spread or something like that. Obviously, you don't want to spend a lot of money if it's not needed, but I think reaching people that are non-digital, the digital divide, as you say, is important still.
Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm kind of almost going the other way. I'm just wondering what sort of a duty and obligation we have to publish anywhere. I seem to remember a time when you wanted to sell your car, you bought a 4-line ad in the newspaper, and it cost you $60 for a week or something like that. Anymore, it's Craigslist or Facebook or it's online basically. From what I've read, print media, newspapers, advertising is just going to zero there because everybody is. And I'm just wondering, do we have a continuing duty to actually advertise in a newspaper or trade or industry publication? I guess that'd be question A. And question B would, at $750 for an ad for the, for a newspaper, what's our budget for advertising? I mean, is it like 500,000 or a million or 100? I mean, I don't have a clue the range of dollars that are out there. If we can, you know, in other words, if we didn't do any print advertising, you know, we'd save $1 million a year. I just don't have a clue what that number is. Through the chair.
Ms. Fowler.
Michaela Fowler, Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Through the chair, Representative Birch. The Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development puts out between 30 and 40 regulations packages per year. I would need to multiply that to find out exactly how much approximately we have allocated to be spending per year on advertisement.
30 to 40 times 1,000, maybe, plus or minus. I mean, mm-hmm. Just okay. So it's in that range. Okay. How about through the chair? Are there other? DOT advertises. I mean, state. I mean, everybody's advertising, right? So it must be. House bill, would that drive potential savings in other state departments or other areas of the state? I mean, I just don't know how big a number. I mean, if it's 40 or 50,000 for your department, I'm just wondering how large a number that is and how creative we might or how much flexibility we might have in, you know, kind of pushing and encouraging people to do what every one of us does in private life, which is, you know, Craigslist and kind of electronic media, if you will, for advertising. Through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Birch. I can only speak to the Department of Commerce's regulations. I do know that all the departments have been working on looking at how many regulations projects they do and trying to figure out exactly what the impact of this legislation would have to each department individually. So I believe that information will be forthcoming from the governor's legislative office shortly.
Okay, and by follow-up. Yeah, do you see any, at some point it comes down to what's adequate from a legal standpoint to get, I mean, I imagine you're probably working that now, but do you have a sense for what is adequate, I don't know. I mean, as far as advertising, I mean, is a posting on the internet? I know a lot of communities are kind of going to that, but I didn't know if the state has taken that initiative or not.
Committee and Representative Birch will do a little bit of follow up on that, but probably what I'll do is I think it'd be worthwhile to look at a couple of the Alaska Supreme Court decisions that give us a couple of shorthand sentences of, you know, the purpose of notice is to give potentially affected people some kind of method, or a potentially affected person would have the ability to think, oh, I better look into that a little closer. Did you want to add something?
Through the chair, for the record, Julie Morris, staff to Representative Tallarico. You know, I know it's imperative that we reach everyone that's affected by regulations, by law. And I know that's very important, and the sponsor knows that that's very important. So we, as the committee, you have not received all the fiscal notes yet from the administration, and so we're still waiting on some fiscal notes. And I would like to see what the impact is myself. I know that they're in review. And I appreciate their willingness to work with us and try to come up with a piece of legislation that will reach, you know, the concerns like Representative Kopp has. I mean, you know, and Ladue, there are small communities out there that we do need to reach. So we'll just work the problem. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not really concerned. I like the legislation, and I'm also aware that newspaper advertising at some point in the not too distant future will be obsolete. I dealt with it in the borough level, the expense of advertising. I think $750 is cheap. If you buy many ads, that's a pretty good. You don't get much for $750. So acknowledging that, I think it's at some point in time going to really be addressed. Not a question, but a recommendation as you go forward with the committee substitute, look at inserting the option of may in, you know, and that will appease, it gives the department all the options they need without a mandate is what I'm hoping for, so they can decide the best method of noticing. That's all I'm asking. So, thank you.
And with that, look to hold the bill and work towards some of the actions described, and that takes us to the second piece of legislation. Thank you very much, Ms. Morris, Ms. Fowler, Ms. Pollard, to House Bill 163. There was public testimony noticed today and wanted to be sure to do that. And it's my intention to hold this bill today. And I do not, I'm going to open public testimony. I do not see anyone online, and I do not see anyone in the room to testify on House Bill 163. Seeing no one, I'm going to close public testimony in House Bill 163 and hold that legislation for now. And that's the run of the agenda for today. This evening we have House Bill 173 and 183 from conversations with sponsor staff on House Bill 183, which is the Permanent Fund Dividend Land Sale legislation. They've been working with the Department of Natural Resources, and we'll put a CS on the record. And I think that will sort of be the run of it. And then with House Bill 173, there will be a sponsor presentation on that legislation. So with that, we are adjourned at 4:11 p.m.